and welcome into the Irish NFL show with me, Colm Cronin. And I think you are in for a treat today. I am delighted to be joined by a man who has covered the Dallas Cowboys for 25 years. He is a Texas native. He's a beat reporter for the Fort Worth Star Telegraph. Welcome to the show, Clarence Hill Jr. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well. And thank you for having me. And I've covered the Cowboys for 25 or so years. But remember, my first year was 96. That's after the three Super Bowls. So I've seen four playoff wins.
I've seen four playoff wins
in my tenure.
Why weren't you born earlier, Clarence? What happened?
Well, I want the record to know that I'm not the jinx, though. Okay, it's bigger than me. You know, my daughter was state in gymnastics this year, so I raised champions. So I'm not the jinx of what the Cowboys have not won since I've been covering the team.
I'll make sure that goes in the show notes so everybody knows you are not responsible. But I suppose let's go back to even before that. Like, what was it, I suppose, that drew you into being a reporter? Were you always interested? Was it like the storytelling? Was it the Cowboys? What was it that led you into this?
I realized I couldn't play. No, I grew up in a small town in Texas, and I consumed sports, and I played five different sports. Football was always my favorite, and the Cowboys were my favorite team. I idolized Drew Pearson and Tony Dorsett and all that. But, you know, I wanted to play. I realized I couldn't play, and I started. But because I was so consumed with sports, I was consumed with sports writers and newspapers and TV. And so I started writing for my school paper in high school, and even while I was playing sports, and I did so in college, and it kind of became a career. I didn't, this whole thing with the Cowboys, you know, I started my career in Kansas City, and I went to several different papers before landing in Fort Worth, and I was actually covering high schools, and I kind of got promoted to the Cowboys. So it wasn't like, you know, I wanted to cover the Cowboys, and that's how I ended up. But I did grow up wanting to play at Texas Stadium, thinking I was going to be the next Tony Dorsett. And, you know, like I always tell people, you know, dreams would always end up like you want them to be, but they end up like they're supposed to be. So instead of, you know, playing on the field at Texas Stadium or AT&T Stadium, I'm there writing about the Cowboys every Sunday at AT&T Stadium. So it's just a different version of the same dream.
Yeah, no, you carved out a very, very good career, and you know, you work hard at it. And I suppose I can let you know, right, on this side of the Atlantic, like watching the NFL has been a real journey, because we used to get the highlights of the league, right, back in the 80s and the early 90s. Okay, so we saw the Cowboys when they were at their peak, and then they stopped showing the highlights. And what ended up, I suppose, happening was, for the really dedicated fans, you could read about it and really seek it out. This was the pre-internet days. But now, obviously, there's 24/7 coverage. Social media, everything is covered. Like, OTAs are covered. And OTAs are covered as if, like, they're life and death, you know?
Right.
And everything is analyzed and just debated and discussed. I suppose I'm interested in hearing about, you know, your journey covering the sport since, you know, 96, as you said, and like what has that been like from your perspective in terms of the way in which you've seen things shift and develop and change?
Well, I mean, yeah, again, before internet to the internet, you know, and there was a time when we had time off, and now we don't have time off because you have to feed the beast 24/7, 365, and you know, and it's. You don't wait till the night. Yeah, everything goes up immediately, and so it's just a different realm. And again, I've, you know, it's funny because, like I said, I didn't get the three Super Bowl champion Cowboys. I got the retirements of Troy Emmett and Michael and Dion and you know, the Quincy Carter years. I like to say the Dave Campbell years. That I don't know how old you are, but you know, Barry Switzer at the airport with the gun was my first year, you know, on the beat, and so. Covering the Cowboys for me is like, you know, there are beat writers, and it's kind of like a beat writer on steroids because you cover everything. I've covered murders, covered driving arrests, I've covered drug trials. Obviously, you know, writing stories about people going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, you have to, stadium stories, you know, financial stories. You know, you have to cover the gamut. And like I said, it's like a beat writer on steroids. And, it's taken me, you know, I've been to Japan, I've been to London, I've been to Mexico, I've been to Canada, I've been everywhere with the team, everywhere I'm embedded with the team. I've been embedded with the team since 1996. I go everywhere they go. And so it's been quite a journey. But yes, the age of the internet, the age of social media has made it nonstop, you know, and there's always a thirst for news, a thirst for information.
And for anyone listening, you have to follow Clarence on Twitter. When we're going to include that in the show notes. But one of the things in your Twitter bio is the fact you're battle tested 7 different coaches. And I suppose, you know, in terms of who have been your most intriguing or the most entertaining to cover? Because obviously there'll be a different relationship with each of them. But you alluded to it in the previous answer. It's never dull with the Cowboys.
No, it's never dull. It's certainly never been dull with the coaches. And, you know, so I never really got the Jimmy Johnson Cowboys. So I started with Barry Switzer, and I'm a Longhorn, and Barry the Switzer a Sooner. And so we should just go back and forth about the Sooners and Longhorns. And I like Barry. A lot of people don't like Barry. Barry's a very engaging guy. You know, he's a guy you want to have a beer with. You want to have a conversation with. He's very engaged. Now, we can debate all day about his ability to coach and whether he brought down the discipline and that really brought down the franchise and sort of that dynasty, but a great guy to deal with. Chan Gailey came. He's a different guy, more buttoned up, you know, and then I don't think he was the right fit for the Cowboys, certainly. Then Dan Campbell, but, I mean, we all learned from Bill Parcells when he came. And, you know, it was like a football tutorial on life, how to raise kids. You know, just I mean, there are anecdotes that I got from the Bill Parcells press conference I used on my kids and how we, you know, I deal and raise with my kids. So, you know, and certainly he helped bring back, you know, the Cowboys to some stability, which, you know, one reason why they were able to build that stadium by that stadium. And a lot of people didn't like Wade Phillips. I love Wade Phillips. He's a Texas guy. It was his dream job, you know, and I'm still close to he and his wife and his family. And I love Wade. And, you know, and of course, Jason, and well, you had a long run here. And like I said, I covered Jason, you know, in the 90s. So that's how long I've been here. And I like Mike McCarthy, you know, and I think that, you know, I wrote a column last week about Mike McCarthy getting a bad rap and people are, you know, someone wrote a column last week ranking Mike McCarthy as the 21st best coach in the NFL. Now, this is a guy who, just by sheer numbers, is one of the top 20 all-time winningest coaches in NFL history. It's ludicrous to think he's the 21st best coach in NFL this year, especially after winning back-to-back 12 games, won as many games as any coach in the NFL except Andy Reid the past 2 years. And he did it, you know, we started last year without his quarterback 5 games. You know, you don't give him credit for any of that. And he also has a Super Bowl on his resume. So I think Mike has been good, you know, and I like Mike. So it's certainly been intriguing with all the different coaches. But the bottom line is, until Mike or any of these guys win, you know, he's on the hot seat like everybody else. You know, the goal is not to get to the playoffs, just to win.
I got to go back to Wade. As a Broncos fan, Wade is dear to my heart. And is there a finer storyteller on the planet than Wade Phillips? I think he gets an unfair rep because I think his head coaching record, you know, in the various places he was, is stands up. It went wrong in that last season with the Cowboys. Why did it go so wrong in that season, Clarence?
Well, I mean, looking into the season, certainly during that era when they had a bad season, because Romo got hurt. Romo got hurt, and that changed everything for that season. And so sometimes Jerry Jones feeds into the media, and a lot of media didn't like Wade or whatever else and thought he was soft, and certainly was different than Parcells, and they didn't think the players played for him. But they weren't going to win without Tony Romo. When he got hurt in the season, that season was done. You know, unfair to Wade, they'd already hired Jason Garrett, you know, even before they hired Wade, when they initially hired Wade to be the offensive coordinator, and that's the guy that Jerry wanted to promote to the job, you know, from day one. And so it just opened the door for him to do what he wanted to do, in a sense, promote Jason Garrett to the job. But You know, obviously, I think that, you know, some of, again, just like with Barry coming from Jimmy, some of the discipline was eroded. You know, was it the same? But, you know, sometimes players get tired of hearing that stern voice and they need a different voice. And I think that one reason why they, that first year they played so well, it went 13-3, you know. But, you know, as the years go by, you know, some of that stuff does not sustain itself. And I think the biggest difference from 09 when they went to the playoffs, they won the first playoff game. I mean, we forget 09, they won the playoff game. You know, won their first playoff game. They got beat by Brett Favre and the Vikings, you know, who then lost to Sean Payton and that controversy down there when they kind of went after Brett Favre and he got all those suspensions. But, you know, if Tony don't get hurt, I think they go back to the playoffs in 2010 and we're having a different story.
Yeah, one of those sliding doors moments. And you talked about the coaches, and look, you've seen quite a few quarterbacks, because obviously you caught the tail end of Troy's career. And then obviously the kind of in between years, then Romo comes in, and then Dak comes on the scene. I suppose, you know, your thoughts on those three guys and kind of the type of guys that the three of them are. Like, you know, I think that would be interesting as somebody who's kind of covered them and all three.
Yeah, they're definitely different guys. And I think that most people, if you talk, Dak is more like Troy in a sense. He's more of a leader and more, you know, he's not flashy, but he gets the job done. And that's certainly what Troy does. And Romo was more the gunslinger type quarterback. You know, they're different. But as far as leadership styles, I mean, Troy is a guy who was the number one overall pick, who lived up to everything that he was supposed to be, you know, and won three Super Bowls and did it the right way. And you know, he's still a guy that believes in a certain way of playing football and doing it the right way. And it's, you know, he said the right things when he was a quarterback. And certainly, you know, as an analyst, he's very critical of the Cowboys because he believes in the standard. I mean, he was the one of the people that were most disappointed with the Barry Switzer Cowboys, because he was raised by Jimmy, you know, and he understood what Jimmy and how that team was built. And when things eroded, you know, the discipline and everything else eroded, how they eroded to play on the field, he was frustrated. That's just how he was. And Tony, you know, here's a guy who was an undrafted free agent, one of the greatest undrafted free agent stories in the history of NFL. If you look for where he came from, the expectations, and just coming out. Everybody talks about Tom Brady, but at least he was a 6th-round pick. I mean, Tony Romo was not picked by anyone, and to come and do what he did, replacing Benedict Testaverde, but being the quarterback he was, which kind of the way he was in college. I mean, he was overlooked coming out of high school, overlooked coming out of college. And to make the career he had, you know, he did become a celebrity quarterback, which Parcells was, you know, kind of feared. And he certainly wasn't the same leader as Dak and Troy. But, you know, to get what you got out of Tony, the type of person he was. I remember when he was a nobody, undrafted guy sitting behind Quincy Carter. And if Quincy Carter doesn't get cut, you know, maybe Tony's cut that year at training camp. People forget that, you know, and Quincy Carter was cut training camp. Tony was the 4th quarterback. He might not have even made the team, but we might not even have this Tony Romo story that we have. And of course, Dak, another guy like Tony, who really came from no out of nowhere, 4th-round pick, no expectations, and, you know, putting up the numbers here. But the thing about Dak is the person, the leadership, the salt-of-the-earth guy who speaks to everybody and is welcomed by everybody, but it's first one in the building, last one to leave, everything you want in the quarterback. And, you know, again, just like with Tony, you know, the standard is Troy, the standard is Roger. They got to win, and he needs to win.
Yeah, and is it the fact that he plays with the Cowboys that he's so divisive? Like you alluded to it earlier. We live in an age, right, where Mike McCarthy is the worst coach in the NFL, and Dak is the worst quarterback, and like they're hot takes, and there's just a need to fill space. But I suppose, like, you know, there's the good and the bad,
I call it the Cowboys tax. It's a tax.
Okay, yeah, the star on the helmet means it's the focus.
It's the Cowboys tax, and I think that there is. in some respects, you get a lot of attention because you play for the Cowboys, and mm-hmm. which is one reason why he's been one of the highest sellers as far as, you know, jerseys and paraphernalia since he's been in the league as a rookie. But, you know, it's a double-edged sword because you also get that scrutiny because of the Cowboys quarterback. And it's, you know, because I've been arguing with people on that. If you guys follow me on Twitter, you can get all of me. And I don't talk just about football. I talk politics. And I'm not a senior. You know, I have a variety of interests. And so you get that. But I'm arguing. The Josh Allen was named the Madden cover winner this year. Okay. And people forget that Josh Allen led the NFL in turnovers last year. But no one talks about that. They talk about Dak in the league in turnovers. But Josh Allen and Dak tied for league lead interceptions, and yet and fumbled, and Josh Allen led the league in turnovers. No one's saying, what is Josh going to do and why was Josh so bad? It's only an issue with Dak that now all of a sudden he's, you know, the worst quarterback who turns the ball over all the time. But that's not his career. That's not his history. He's historically been a guy who's taken care of the football. It's only last year when I think that the Cowboys did him a disservice when they took Amari Cooper away and they gave him less weapons because they can replace Amari Cooper, and they knew going in that Michael Gallup was not going to be healthy, and it was falling for the count on Jalen Tolbert, a third round pick, to come in and have an impact as a rookie. And so they asked him to do too much with less weapons, and he forced him to. He took some chances. There was also a lot of miscommunication, a lot of drop passes, which what I call was one of the worst receiving corps in the league. Week in and week out, the Cowboys had the worst set of weapons they worked for on the field. Yeah, I saw the CeeDee Lamb. And I think that played a role into Dak's play. But yes, Dak gets a lot of attention, a lot of scrutiny because being a Cowboys quarterback, I mean, that comes with the, you know, as Bill Parcells used to say, come with the dinner being with the Cowboys, you know, so you're going to get that scrutiny. And it's good when you're going well, but when things are going well, it goes bad. And all these first takes and all these shows, you know, make their money talking about the Cowboys, talking about that.
And I definitely think over the last few years, like, it has been the law of diminishing returns for the weapons they've put around Dak. But we've seen maybe, like, we thought, like, so they moved on from Zeke, but all of us, like, this week, and I know you were talking about it, like, Jerry's talking about Zeke again. Is Jerry ever, like, again, this is easy for me to say from 5,000-6,000 miles away, but is Jerry ever going to get out of the way and allow, you know, the Cowboys to?
Boy, he's never going to get out of the way because he's socks and jocks and it's his team and he's going to make the decisions. But most of the decisions are done part and parcel with the coach and with Stephen Jones. And when Jerry talks about Zeke, it's just to continue to keep the name out there. I mean, it's like the Odell Beckham thing. I mean, Jerry was talking about Odell Beckham all the way through March, and the Cowboys hadn't talked to him since December. You know, there was really nothing real to the Cowboys and Odell Beckham. And certainly when the free agency came, when the next year came, and it was time to add to the receiving corps, they went and got Brandon Cooks. They never even made a phone call to Odell Beckham. But Jerry kept, every time they asked about Odell Beckham, Jerry continued to say, we're interested in Odell Beckham, so we could keep it on ESPN, keep it on headlines and everything else. I think the same thing is with the Zeke thing. You keep Zeke's name out there. We're going to keep talking about it. Going to keep, you know, Jerry is a believer in keep talking about the Cowboys. That's how I made millions. That's why they're the most profitable franchise in the world. But the reality is when the Cowboys cut Zeke, they need him off from a pay cut. You know, and they have not had any discussions with his representatives since he was cut about him coming back. And I know Zeke is focused on finding another team. You know, the ironic thing, I think no one saw him not being with the team at this point and still, you know, being unemployed. So those questions are still out there for Jerry to answer and say, we're still interested in Zeke, but that's unlikely to happen.
And maybe generous with your time, but I want to get Micah Parsons, right? Like, did anyone within the building expect him to be as good as he has been?
You know, and that's just it. I don't think that anybody knew he was as good as he had been because he wouldn't have been picked where he was. I mean, he would have been picked much higher. Cowboys certainly going into that draft were focused on getting cornerbacks, and that's what was their need. And then they kind of fell into Micah Parsons because the two cornerbacks were taken. And both of us seen the two cornerbacks would have taken Micah Parsons. Most people in the top five would have taken Michael Parsons. Look, you go redraft that draft, and Michael Parsons is at the top of the list. So, you know, I think the Cowboys thought he was special, but, you know, he did not rush the passer in college. So no one knew that he had this type of pass rush ability. So the Cowboys thought he did. They thought he could do it, but no one knew that he was going to be this good. No, there's no way they knew that. And so it's been a home run. You know, he's on pace to be, you know, one of the greatest Cowboys ever, you know, but he just talked this year, you know, he wants to win. He wants to be impact play. Just doesn't want to win a sack title. And I think that's on the table for him this year as he focuses more on defensive end and getting after the quarterback that he had the chance to make a play for sack title. You know, he's a 2-time all pro in his first 2 years in the league. But, you know, he wants to be an impact player in championship defense.
And how important has Dan Quinn been to his development?
His development, the whole team's development. I mean, it was the going to Dan Quinn after that mistake they made with Mike's first defense coordinator, it's been a godsend. And certainly Michael Parsons coming here at the same time, you know, helped that. But I mean, Dan Quinn, you know, everything he does with defense, not just Michael Parsons, but look at the safeties and Jaron Curse and how those guys have developed and played. And you look at, you know, everybody around that defense, you got playmakers on every level of defense. That's one thing they haven't had in the past. But this defense has playmakers on every level of defense. And it's part of, you know, Dan finding players and also how Dan uses them in his scheme, that big nickel safety scheme. But those three safeties out there has played a big role in what the Cowboys do. And that's something he didn't do in Seattle. Everybody say, well, he's bringing the Seattle defense. No, he's evolved. You know, it's not the same. He doesn't employ guys the same way he did in Seattle when they won the Super Bowl, you know, with the Legion of Boom. They're different team, different players, and he's evolved with them. And that big nickel defense, those three safeties are special as well.
Clarence, you are as entertaining a storyteller as you are on Twitter, and we'll definitely put the links in to the show notes. But for people on this side of the Atlantic who mightn't be that familiar with you, where can they find you?
If I'm on Twitter at Clarence Hill Jr., that's C-L-A-R-E-N-C-E, Hill, H-I-L-L-J-R, all together, Clarence Hill Jr. I'm on Instagram at Chill NFL. My nickname is Chill, C-H-I-L-L, NFL. Chill NFL is on Instagram. And so I'm on Facebook at Clarence E. Hill Jr. So you can see me all those places, as well as at the Fort Worth Star Telegram website, startelegram.com.
And that is one of the websites that isn't geo-blocked. So definitely check out Clarence and his stuff. And I like what you said. You're not a seam head, but in Ireland, that's not that. We love all sports. We talk politics. We talk everything over here. So right. Absolutely would recommend checking you out. And just want to thank you again for taking the time to chat to me on the Irish NFL Show.
No problem, man. I appreciate it.
The Irish NFL Show. We truly appreciate all of our listeners. If you're enjoying the show, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing on whichever platform you use to listen. It really makes a difference in terms of helping others to find the show. Also, if you want, reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, or email info@irishnflshow.com. Let us know your thoughts, if you have ideas for guests or a topic you would like us to cover.